I will be forever the myth.
You're the king of kings, though.
There's always a pecking order. The little peckers never mess with the big peckers. So I'm a rooster, and he's a chicken.
This episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast is brought to you by our Patreon sponsors. If you'd like to become a Patreon sponsor and help support the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, please go to our official website, bodybuildinglegendshow.com, and you'll see the link in the upper right-hand corner, or you can check it out in the description below. All right, welcome everybody to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, where we talk to the legends of bodybuilding, and we also talk about the history of bodybuilding. I'm your host, John Hansen. On today's show, we don't have any guests, so I'm going to dive into the magazine articles, the old magazine articles, and share with you guys some old magazine articles from the past, particularly the 1980s this time, when we were doing our End of the Review podcast with Jerry Branum and also with Sean Ray last week. We've been doing since the year started. I was going back into looking at some of these magazines to get some information and also take some pictures for the video portion of the interviews. And I found some really, really, you know, these articles were so great. And we really don't get to share the articles when we talk about it with Jerry. We just kind of talk about the general stuff of the contest and we don't really get into the specifics. So I thought I would share with you some of these magazine articles. Of course, back in the 1980s, you had Joe Weider's Muscle and Fitness magazine, and you also had Flex magazine. So there was really double coverage of every big event in bodybuilding from two different magazines from the same publisher. And then you had Muscle Mag International, and of course we also had Muscle Digest and Muscle Training Illustrated, and we had Ironman magazine. So I thought I would share with you guys today Muscle and Fitness and Flex and also Muscle Mag. And I thought we could go over some of the big competitions from 1983, which we just covered a couple of weeks ago with Jerry. And I thought specifically we could talk about the Pro World Championships that Muhammad Mukawe won in the beginning of 1983. And that was Lee Haney's first professional contest. And also the Night of the Champions contest that Lee Haney won, which was a couple months later in May. And that was Lee's first professional win. And that was before he took third place in his first Mr. Olympia later that year. I also discovered some old magazines from John Bailick. I don't know if you guys remember these. He released them in 1983. It was called John Bailick's Bodybuilding News. And as to my knowledge, I believe there was only about eight or nine of them. So he basically just covered all of 1983's major contests. And then he covered the Pro World Competition in 1984. That Albert Beckles won, and that was it. And for whatever reason, maybe it wasn't financially feasible, John just stopped putting these out. But these were really, really great little magazines. They basically just covered one contest. So whatever contest was going on, whether it was the Night of the Champions or the Nationals or the Mr. Universe or the Mr. Olympia, John would cover that contest, and he would put it out very quickly, because back then, you would usually have to wait about 3 months for a magazine to come out with all the pictures and the coverage and the contest reports and everything. But John would get his out very quickly. So I subscribed to this magazine, and you would get it within a month after the contest was over. And John, of course, was a great photographer as well as a writer. And then he also became, of course, the owner of Ironman magazine. He bought it from Perry Rader in 1986, I believe. So before that, John was a great photographer. He worked for Joe Weider. So the pictures in these bodybuilding news issues are fantastic. I mean, they're black and white pictures. They're super clear. And he really covered it extensively. He's got the score sheets showing everybody's scores. And he wrote a little article, too, his impressions of it. So I thought I would read a couple of these. The ones I wanted to read was from the MPC Nationals, which was in 1983 that Bob Paris won. They actually call it the MPC Mr. America on this cover. And then also the IFBB Mr. Universe from 83, where the American team did very well with Bob Paris, Charles Glass, and Chuck Williams all winning their classes. So there was some interesting information here that wasn't shared in the regular articles. So I wanted to read those first. So we'll go over those first, and then we'll do some articles from the Pro World from 1983 that Muhammad Mukawe won, and also the 1983 Night of the Champions. All right, so I got a lot of stuff to share with you guys today. I hope you really enjoy it. And if you have any other ideas for other articles I should read on the weeks where we don't have an interview, please let me know, and I will try to get those out to you because I got a ton of information. We got training articles, personality pieces, contest reports, and I got them from the 70s, the 80s, the 60s, 90s. Just let me know what you guys want to hear, and I'll try to share it with them. It's a shame that these magazines aren't really available anymore, and some of you may have had them back in the 80s if you were following bodybuilding back then. But for those of you who are new to the sport and who weren't around back then, of course, you never get to see these magazine articles. So some really, really some great stuff back then. What else is going on? We got the Arnold Classic coming up next weekend out in Columbus, Ohio. This contest started in 1989 with Arnold and Jim Lorimer. Jim has now passed away. Jim passed away a couple years ago. He was in his 90s, but Arnold and Jim had a long relationship. Arnold has a new partner, and they have taken it over the last couple of years, but they are still in Columbus, Ohio, and it's always a great event. I guess Jay Cutler is getting the Lifetime Achievement Award, so congratulations to Jay. Jay won the Arnold Classic, I believe, four times, and he's one of our greatest champions and a great ambassador to the sport. If you've ever met Jay, he's super nice, just a great spokesperson for bodybuilding. Contest looks like it's going to be between Samson Dauda, who was third place at the Mr. Olympia last year, and former Mr. Olympia Hadi Chopin, who won the contest in 2022, and he took second last year to Derek Lunsford. So it looks like it's going to be a showdown between those two, but it will be available on pay-per-view. So if you're interested in watching it, I believe the pay-per-view is free. So can't really call it pay-per-view. It's just they're going to have a video coverage of it, and it'll be for free this year. So I will definitely be watching that. I don't think I'll be out there. In fact, I will not be out there, but I will be watching it. So check that out next week if you're interested in that. Our Patreon sponsors also get a newsletter from me, so I've been kind of lax in getting that out. So we will start putting the newsletter out more consistently. So in addition to the newsletter, Patreon sponsors also get articles read to them also by audio and by video. So the video will include pictures from that article. So those will be coming out more often too. So if you guys are interested in becoming a Patreon sponsor, check the link below and you'll see all the different tiers we have and all the different levels of sponsorship you can sponsor us with. All right. And I've got a big seminar coming up in the next 2 weeks. And this will be out at Guaranteed Fitness Center, which is in Spencer, Massachusetts. I think this is like my fourth or fifth time going out there now. Bruce, the owner of the gym, has brought me out over the last couple of years. And last year, I went out there with Lee Haney. So this year, he's going to have a really big seminar. It's going to be me, Lee Haney, and Linda Murray. So we've got two eight-time Mr. and Miss Olympias at this seminar. Talk about some legends and some great information. So if you guys are in the area, Guaranteed Fitness Center. The website is guaranteedfitness.org. You can check out details, but we will be out there on March 9th at 10 a.m. doing a hands-on bodybuilding and posing seminar. And so it'll be a great event. It is free, of course, for anybody who is a member at Guaranteed Fitness. But if you're not, if you're in the area, just try to come out and it won't be that expensive. It'll be a great seminar for sure. And I'd like to see you guys. It's $49 for non-members and guests. So I'm trying to get Bruce to somehow put it on Facebook Live or video it so other people can see it. So he's working on that. So hopefully we'll get that together and then it'll be available. And if it is, I will let you guys know where you can see it. But like I said, if you're in the Massachusetts area, if you're not too far from there, maybe you want to drive out there on March 9th, Saturday, March 9th, for the seminar with myself, Lee Haney, and Linda Murray. That'll be a great event. All right, let me read some of these emails that I got from you guys. If anybody's interested in sending me an email about the show, any of your thoughts or comments, send it to naturalolympia@gmail.com. So this first one says, "Hey, John, I love the interview with Sean and Jerry on the 1993 Mr. Olympia. Sean is a true champion in my book. Great interview. Although Flex was phenomenal, everything took a toll on him later. I often wonder what is lurking around the corner for me after many years of anabolics in my younger years. Who knows? Thank you for such a great podcast. Keep up the great work, Mike Wallace." All right. Thank you, Mike. Yeah, I really enjoyed that interview with Sean last week, too. Sean is, I believe, one of the most articulate and educated bodybuilders on the scene today. and he really is a great interview. So I hope you guys got a chance to enjoy that if you had to listen to it. If you didn't check it out yet, it was last week's podcast where Sean and Jerry and myself went into detail on the 1993 Mr. Olympia. This one says, hey, John, I just finished listening to your recent series of discussions with Jerry Branum covering the bodybuilding years 1963, 73, 83, and 93. Thoroughly enjoyed them. Have you ever thought of going back another decade and reviewing the 50s? I'm sure both you and Jerry will be able to pay adequate justice to this very important period of bodybuilding history. Jerry most likely would have a number of personal stories involving the greats of that time through his meetings with them years later. The article you recently read in relation to Cal Skulak and his 1977 IFBB Mr. Universe victory over Mike Mentzer was exceptional. I have read many articles on the event, but never got to the bottom of why the prejudging was discounted in the final adjudication. This article clarified that for me. Cal is one of my favorites, so it was a great discussion in my eyes. Glad to finally get the full story, as the majority of articles were misguided in their interpretation of the rules. You seem to have a knack of pulling out these gems of articles to share with us on an ongoing basis. Finally, I had some great feedback from your audience to an earlier email I sent to you in relation to my Vintage Bodybuilding Magazine website, which is at vintagebodybuildingmags.com. It was very encouraging and has provided me with further motivation to share my passion and my vast collection of silver and golden era magazines. I must tell you, you have a dedicated and passionate audience. Your efforts are greatly appreciated. Keep up the great work. Take care, Michael Economides from Melbourne, Australia. And we heard from Michael a couple weeks ago. So yeah, check out his website, vintagebodybuildingmags.com. And that's a great idea about the 50s. Yeah, we've never really covered the 50s on this podcast. We usually stick to the 60s, 70s, and 80s. But yeah, it would be a good idea to go back into the 50s and see some of those contests, maybe with Reg Park and Steve Reeves. They won the very first, they were in the very first NABBA Mr. Universe, which was in 1950. So yeah, that probably would be a good period. That's a great idea. So I'll talk to Jerry about that, see if we can come up with some contests to cover. And I'm glad you enjoyed that article about Cal and that 1977 universe. That was news to me, too, when I read that. That was great stuff. And I will check out your website as well to see what you got on there. All right, guys. So that's all I got for our opening. So let's go to some of these magazines that I want to share with you. So this first one, I want to read John Balik's Bodybuilding News. This was issue number 6. And like I said, John, I think only did about 8 or 9 of these. I've got all of them because I had a subscription to it. And this is about the MPC Nationals, and he calls it the MPC Mr. America 83, which it was not, because the year before, I think they went to court, the AAU and the MPC, to see who had the rights to call their contest the Mr. America, and the AAU won. So the first year in 1982, the MPC called their championships the American Bodybuilding Championships, and the AAU called theirs, of course, the Mr. America. So in 83, I believe this was the first year that they actually called it the MPC Nationals. At least that's the way it looks from the coverage in the magazines. So let me read John's report of this. It says, Paris conquers San Jose. The MPC National Championships, formerly the Mr. America, drew 91 competitors and a sellout crowd of 3,000 to the San Jose Center for the Performing Arts. The venue was one befitting the quality of the contestants, terrific seating, a large stage, and a well-run show, considering the massive number of contestants. The MPC judging is very streamlined compared to the IFBB or AFWB judging systems. AFWB was the Women's Amateur Association that was connected with the IFBB. The MPC does not use the round-by-round scoring system of the AFWB-IFBB. My opinion is that the MPC system is best. The general assessment is done as a group. Each competitor performs his individual posing routine, and then group comparisons are done based on whom each individual judge wants to see compared. When you review the score sheets, you will see a single place awarded by each judge per man. What each judge is looking for is the total combination of muscularity, size, proportion, and presentation. The judging of bodybuilding contests is subjective, and this type of judging is most appropriate. You will notice that each judge is identified on the computer score sheet, and a percentage is given after his name. The percentage is a statistical measurement of the judge's accuracy. The higher the percentage, theoretically, the better the judge. The score sheets constitute the placings after the prejudging Friday, and in fact were different on Saturday. While the judging is complete on Friday, if the competitor does not come back for the final show, he loses his place or award. In the light heavyweight class, Ed Zajac, who placed sixth, did not show and therefore forfeited his position. Everyone below him then moved up a place. In the heavyweight class, fourth place, Jeffrey Williams did not show up with the same results. Tim Belknap was a special case as he was competing solely for a place on the U.S. team. Tim was second to Chuck Williams and therefore was out of the competition. Again, everyone below Tim moved up a place. The prejudging scores with the changes mentioned then became the final placings for the Saturday night show. During the Friday prejudging, I was occupied with a studio setup, so I didn't get a chance to see the comparisons on stage. My remarks will be based on seeing my competitor, each competitor pose for me backstage and my viewing and shooting of the show on Saturday, November 5th, 1983. Rarely do we have a prejudging on one day and a final on the next. The peak must be maintained so that if you are in the pose down for the overall title, you will be ready. Even though the judging is completed except for the overall pose down, I could feel the sense of responsibility exhibited by most competitors in that one day. They collectively wanted to give the best presentation possible to the paying customers. Responsibility was shown on all fronts. The MPC for choosing Paul Love as promoter, the competitors for their number and quality, and finally, the fans. Take out any of these ingredients and the show wouldn't have been the success that it was. Good sportsmanship was shown during the agonizing moments following the placements. It was very difficult to stand up there and hold together in an emotional climate that is so totally focused on winning. Difficult, but every competitor was able to rise to the occasion. Congratulations. Lightweight. The lightweight class was very strong with 19 competitors, the top five being exceptional. Dr. Jesse Lujan, an MD from San Diego, California, has the kind of excellent proportions that immediately catch the eye. His first place decision was a reasonable decision. To me, the show was between Jesse and Jose Guzman of the Bronx, New York. Jose has beautiful shapes, as does Jesse, with perhaps slightly less overall definition. Look at the score sheet and you will see a large number of scattered votes. Jesse's scores varied between first and fifth. Jose's between second and sixth. Why? Dean Tornabene, who plays second, had scores varying between first and seventh. Both Scott Livingstone and Dean had more first place votes than the winner of the class. As in the Miss Olympia judging, they got the first place right, but there was apparently a massive confusion after that. Because of the wide range of individual scores, the final scores did not accurately show the relative distance between competitors. The final score, as shown on the computer sheet, represents the total score from five judges with the high and low scores eliminated. When the first place man gets only one first place vote and the judges score all above 90% statistically, the folly of judging judges by statistics becomes apparent. Scott Livingston tied Dean for second, but because Dean had a second place vote and Scott did not, the tie was broken. Scott had outstanding muscularity to play against Dean's thickness. Albert Garcia, fifth place, ended up where I would have placed him, but by the very circuitous route of having two firsts and a 14th. Wow, that's crazy. So let me look at the judges' score sheets here. Jesse Lujan had one first place vote, as John said. He had two second place votes, two third place votes, a fourth and a fifth. And then Dean Tornabene, who was in second, got two first place votes, one second place vote, one third, one fourth, a sixth, and a seventh. Scott Livingstone, who tied with Dean, got two first place votes, a third, and then four fours. And then Jose Guzman in fourth did not get any first place votes, but he got two seconds, two thirds, and three sixes. Yeah, crazy how the scores are so varied. And then Albert Garcia, who took fifth, as John mentioned, got two first place votes, a third, and then three sevenths, and a 14th. So, of course, the 14 was crossed out because that's the high score, and then the low score of one was crossed out. So he ended up with a 7, a 1, a 3, a 7, and a 7. And those 7s knocked him down to 5th. The judges were Clarence Bass, Ralph Countryman, Ken Neely, Peter Potter from Florida, Dickie Smith, Charles Simkovich, and Joe Valdez. All right, middleweight. Much more consistent judging here and a top five that I thought were correctly placed. Charles Glass of Los Angeles made the decision to come down to this class from his usual light-heavy class, and it obviously paid off. He had to give up muscle to get down to this class, but in doing so, he actually improved his proportions. Cut is what he was, with enough size and proportion to put it together. Charles has been trying to win a class for at least 4 years, and his win is a real testament to his dedication. He is a worthy addition to the team. Lindsey McKinney and John Arneda tied for second, but Lindsey took it by virtue of having second place votes. This is the type of judging decision that comes up all the time. John has the proportion, but was just not as cut as Lindsey. If John were in really hard condition, he would be very difficult to beat in this class. Ernie Santiago is one of the real disappointments of the show. I expected him to be the man to beat, and I said so in flex. He wasn't nearly as hard as he was when he won the USA, and he lacked the spark that being in great condition engenders. Michael Grieco, in fifth place, was not as far from Ernie as the point spread seems to show. The depth of the competition is shown by the closeness of the scores. A lot of tough judging decisions in this class. All right, so going over the score sheets, Charles Glass got three first-place votes, two second-place votes, and two third-place votes for a score of 9. And then Lindsey McKinney in second just got one first-place vote. He got two second-place votes, two third-place votes, and two fourth-place votes, so he got 14. And then John Arneda in third, who I thought was a great bodybuilder, he got two first-place votes as well. And then he got three third-place votes and two fourth-place votes. So he tied with Lindsey McKinney for second, but Lindsey, I guess, had more second-place votes. The way they break these tie barriers is they look at each score compared to those two guys, and then they see who had the lowest score, and they count the lowest scores, and whoever had the lowest wins. So, like, Judge 1 had Lindsey in first, John in third. Judge 2 had John in third, Lindsey fourth. Judge 3 had John in first, Lindsey fourth. Judge 4 had Lindsey third, John in fourth. Judge 5 had John in first, Lindsey second. Judge 6 had Lindsey second, John in third. And then Judge 7 had Lindsey third, John fourth. And then Ernie Santiago, the winner of the MPC USA that year, he got one first place vote, but he got three second place votes, one fourth, and then two fifths. And then Michael Grieco, he was placed pretty low by most of the judges. He had one fourth, four fifths, and two sixths. And the judges were Richard Cavalier, Rod Miller, Paul Edney, Mike Hawkins, John Carl Meese, also from Florida, Mike Ovis, and Harry Schwartzer. All right, light heavyweight class. Chuck Williams from Teaneck, New Jersey, was one of the pleasant surprises of the contest. He weighed in at 187.5. He looks like he's 215. It's difficult to believe that he was more than 10 pounds from the class limit. He has a Bertel Fox type of physique with better balance and excellent shape. Tim Belknap, by virtue of having placed second to Chuck, again lost his bid to be a part of the U.S. team. Tim was in the best condition of his life and needed this team win as a first step towards being eligible for the Mr. Olympia. Moses Maldonado then moved up to second place. When Moses improves his back, his only real weakness, he was unable to attain the condition that had won him a place on the team in 82. Benny Pota from Pittsburgh is known for his unusual facial positions when posing. Benny capitalized on his Beast from the East reputation and gave the audience a very original posing routine. He improved on his Mr. USA condition. Another if, Steven Ryder in fourth place, had great legs and excellent body shape, but he just didn't show up in top condition. He is capable of winning this class. If I were Steve, I would concentrate on peaking for only one show in 1984. He could win it. Joe Bucci was the heaviest man in the top five, which probably proves that size is less important than leanness. His massive biceps are impressive, but makes it difficult for the rest of his physique to harmonize. I think he should show less emphasis on his arms and his posing routine. He is much more than a great pair of biceps. And then going over the scores here, Chuck was a real strong first place winner. He got one, two, three, four, five first place votes. So 5 out of 7 gave him first. And then the other two scores were second. Tim Belknap, going for that position on the team, got 2 first place votes. And then he got a second, and then the rest were thirds. He got 4 thirds. Moses Maldonado, who ended up second after you take out Tim, did not get any first place votes, but he got 3 seconds, 2 thirds, and 2 fourths. And then Benny Poda, he did get 1 second, but most of the judges, and he got 1 third, and then he got 4 fourths and 1 fifth. And then Steven Ryder, he got 1 fourth, 3 fifths, and 3 sixths. So that was definitely a little bit more consistent judging. All right, the heavyweight class, this was the big one. Heavyweight class was the best that I've ever seen. As good as it was, it could have been much better if Rory Liedemeyer and Matt Mendenhall had been at their best. I feel the choice for first was between Bob Parris and Mike Christian. Oh, wow, that's interesting. I thought Rory was the winner. Mike was the hardest, biggest competitor there. Bob was almost as big, almost as hard, and with better muscle shapes. The decision could have gone either way, and it would have been very reasonable. My decision would have been for Parris. Rory is another if. He was vastly improved from his showing in the 81 America, but the rock hard density just wasn't there. He did, in fact, look better the night of the show, but the judging was all completed the day before. Okay, so John was saying Rory was a little off on Friday when they did the judging. Jeff Williams did not compete in his best condition, and then he compounded the problem by not showing up for the final show and therefore forfeited his fourth place trophy. Matt Mendenhall, the favorite to win here, was not at his best due to a bout with the flu. In fact, he ran a 102 plus temperature the week before the show. A long year of training, but he will be back. Richard Gasparri is only 20 years old, the youngest competitor to make the top 5 in any class. A lot of potential and the time to realize it. Pose down overall winner, Bob Parris won the overall by virtue of his 5 pose down votes to 2 for Chuck Williams. And if we go over the heavyweight score sheets, Bob Parris got 3 first place votes and 3 second place votes and 1 third. Rory Liedemeyer got 3 first place votes as well, 1 second and 3 thirds. Okay, so that was the difference. So they both got 3 first place votes, but Bob got 3 seconds and Rory got 3 thirds. And then Mike Christian only got 1 first place vote. So the remaining first place vote was for Mike. And then he got 3 seconds and 3 thirds. And then Jeff Williams, who dropped out of the show, wasn't even close, really, by the scores. He got 2 fours and the rest were fives. And then Matt Mendenhall got 2 fourths, 2 fifths, but he got 3 sixths. So that's why he placed below Jeff Williams. And then Richard Gasparri, he did get 2 fourths and then 3 sixths, a seventh and an eighth. So, yeah, he was not even close to that top 5, but he only got into the top 5 because of Jeff Williams dropping out. So the judges there were Clarence Bass, Richard Cavalier, Jim Cumby, Doug Jerry, John Carl Meese, Rod Miller, and Charles Simkovich. And then the judges for the light heavyweight class were Frank Edgenhoff, Walter Gcott, Wayne McCormick, Gail Ovis, Peter Potter, Clark Sanchez, and Jim Smith. So interesting, interesting reporting from John Balick on that one. And like I said, the pictures in this are just outstanding. These black and white, really super clear pictures. Some of the best pictures I've seen of these guys. Okay, issue 7 was about the IFBB Mr. Universe, which took place in Singapore. And it says USA rules in Singapore. Monday, November 21st, 11:30 a.m., the muscle and fitness team of Mike Nevue, Armand Tanney, and Dr. Fred Hatfield, Flex editor Bill Dobbins, are already at the Singapore Airlines counter at LAX. The team will not be traveling with us because of the impossibility of making connections with our flight. Joe Weider will not be with us because of MNF's publication schedule. Mike Nevue has a couple of new Nikon lenses, so we make a stop at U.S. Customs to register the serial numbers so that no duty will have to be paid on our return. Next stop is the bookstore to find something interesting enough to keep us reasonably sane over the next 20 hours of travel. With books bought, we all started to get anxious to get on with it. I haven't been on a flight this year that has gotten off the ground on time, and this one is no exception. The one thing you learn about travel, and international travel in particular, is to roll with the punches. Stay flexible, both emotionally and physically. No sense in wasting energy on something that you have no way of changing. Tuesday, November 22nd, 6:46 p.m., Narita Airport, Tokyo, Japan. It is 1:46 a.m. in L.A., but because of the magic of the international dateline, it is 6:46 p.m. here. The 11-hour, 40-minute nonstop flight from L.A. was very comfortable because we were in a half-full 747. Most of us had three seats to stretch out on, and the food and service were close to what you would expect from domestic first class. We always fly economy, but it's nice to be pampered once in a while. If I am so comfortable, why does my body feel like it has been physically damaged? The damage is caused by the 8 time zones and the loss of a day. After this refueling stop, it's still almost 7 hours and one more time zone to Singapore. So the arrival in Singapore will be 2 a.m. Wednesday. Wow. Wednesday, November 23rd, Singapore. Paul Chow, the IFBB Vice President for Asia, is in the airport to smooth our way through customs and drive us to the Oberoi Imperial Hotel, which will be the official hotel of the championships. I have known Paul for several years, but only through talking to him at various international bodybuilding events around the world. This is my first contact with him on a more social level, and it's obvious from his presence here in the middle of the night that he is dedicated and very well organized. The first impression of Paul as the competent organizer never faltered in the week that he was our host. The organization of a competition of this size is not a one-man show, and Paul surrounded himself with people who got the job done, and done well. The size of the project starts to fall into perspective when you see that 50 countries are represented here by 137 athletes, plus coaches, delegates, etc. Language barriers, cultural differences are all smoothed out by excellent management of an event that could easily degenerate into a quagmire. Congratulations, Paul, you did a superb job. As you will notice, the competition consisted of 5 classes instead of the usual 4. The addition of the bantamweight class was at the discretion of the host country. The bantamweight class is at 65 kilograms or 143 pounds. The judging was conducted on the now standard IFBB placement system. The score sheets that I have reprinted are limited to the placing of the semifinalists. The semifinalists were chosen from an elimination round that preceded the full-scale judging. Even at that, the prejudging took over 9 hours. The long prejudging is not a negative reflection of the organizer, but an indication of the immensity of the job. The score sheets are a synopsis of the judging rather than a judge-by-judge scoring that you usually see in bodybuilding news. This was the only information that was available in time to make my printing deadline. The bantamweights. The bantamweight prejudging started promptly at 9 a.m. on Friday. The original 19 competitors was only slightly reduced to 13 semifinalists who actually went through all 3 rounds of judging. Herman Hoffend, a diminutive but nearly perfect body, easily outdistanced the second place finisher, Antonio Stella. Herman has the kind of proportion, muscle shape, and relative size that would make him a standout in any pose down, regardless of body weight. I would have loved to see him pose down against the heavier class winner. The IFBB no longer has an overall winner, and this giant killer confrontation is one that can only be savored in the imagination. I would like one undisputed world champion rather than the inconclusive 4, or in this particular year, 5 world champions. The idea came from Ben Weider. He thought that if we were more like other sports, we would be more likely to be accepted by other sports federations and therefore fulfill his long-held dream of being part of the Olympics. Herman was a lightweight competitor before this drop to 143 pounds, and judging from what I saw here, he only lost fat because he sure was a big 143. The weigh-in was on Thursday night, so I'm sure that most of the athletes weighed anywhere from 3 to 8 pounds over the very dried-out condition that they were on Thursday. The night before weigh-in was a necessity because of the large number of contestants. For those who timed it right, it meant being big for the class and super hard. Herman timed it right. Fadl Olamin Ali from Singapore had a very unusual posing routine, and his presence was always welcomed by the hometown crowd. The cultural differences were very apparent, and while the standard poses are used, The transitions are where the differences usually show up. Katsumi Ishimuro has the classically oriental proportions of long torso and short legs. I was expecting more martial arts type positioning and poses, but again, I thought that the cultural differences were more in the transitions. I've seen hardcover photo books on Japanese bodybuilding, and the poses were always more of an artistic nature rather than pure muscle shots. It's obvious that the Western way is prevailing, and I would like to see the ethnic nature of Eastern posing preserved, if for no other reason than it is at least visually different. So Herman Hoffman scored a perfect score. There was three rounds of judging. Round one, standing relaxed. Round two, mandatory poses. Round three, posing. And Herman scored a 5, which is perfect because there's 7 judges and they cross out 1 high and 1 low. Antonio Stella from Italy got a 12, 12, and 11 for 35 points. And Elaine Leroy from New Caledonia scored a 13, a 13, and a 15 for 41 points. All right, lightweight class. Appy Steenbeck from Holland was outstanding because of his intense muscularity. Appy does not have the exceptional shapes of Jesse Lujan, but the judges were sufficiently impressed that he was the clear-cut winner of the class. Most of the Europeans had an advantage not enjoyed by the U.S. team. It had to do with time zones and the number of days needed to acclimate to the country. This affects some people more than others, but the additional stress is there nonetheless. Not an excuse, but a reason why the peak is so elusive when extensive travel is involved. As you'll notice on the score sheets, the pose down acted as the 4th round and was in fact held on Saturday night. Mike Pilatus also had the intense hardness so much in vogue today. At 42, he was the oldest of the finalists. I thought Jesse looked much harder on Saturday and had shed some of the water that was so apparent at the Friday prejudging. Jesse Lujan, MD, is originally from Guam, but he now lives in San Diego. One of his friends from Guam came to the contest to cheer him on and brought along some copies of the local Guamanian newspaper. On the cover of the Sunday edition were a photo and story about Jesse winning his class at the MPC National Championships. I doubt that he got that much press in San Diego. Interest in bodybuilding is very high in the Far East and Asia, as evidenced by the daily articles covering the preparation for the competition and the personalities involved. I was informed that this lead-up publicity had been going on for 2 weeks. Shirley Tan, a sports journalist for the Straits Times, was one of the forces involved in getting excellent press for the competition, as was Paul Chow. It was unprecedented that our athletes were interviewed beforehand and that so much was known about them. In talking with Shirley, her enthusiasm for our sport was evident. She did her research with back issues of muscle and fitness. Part of what makes these international competitions so interesting is the opportunity to meet with old friends in our worldwide community of bodybuilding. It's kind of an old home week with the common bond of our interest in bodybuilding. Let's see where the score sheets are for the lightweight class. I think he's got them in the back of the magazine here. Yeah, so Appy Steenbeck got a total score of 19. He got 7 in the first round, 6 and 6 in the second and third rounds. And then Mike Pilatus from England got an 11 in the relaxed round, 14 in round 2, and a 14 in round 3 with 39 points for second. And Jesse Lujan from the USA got a 17 in round 1, a 13 in round 2, and a 14 in round 3. So he had 44 points in third place. All right, middleweights. Charles Glass withstood the rigors of travel, etc., better than anyone else on the U.S. team. Charles was, in fact, better overall than when he won in San Jose, a very difficult feat and one that has a very interesting story behind it, a story that says a lot about the man. As I said earlier, the team was not on my flight, so I didn't know that Charles had missed their plane. His passport had run out, and in his usual last-minute rush, he picked up the expired passport and he didn't discover the error until he was checking in. He missed the flight and had to wait till Tuesday to leave. Wow. He got his passport done pretty quick. During the intervening day, he worked out for 8 hours to help work off the frustration that the slip-up had generated. Then he got on the plane and immediately began to feel the letdown and depression. Then he did what most bodybuilders do when depressed. He ate all the wonderful food that Singapore Airlines would give him. Don't give up yet. Being a highly motivated athlete and still having hope, he forced himself to throw up all that food, which would have caused him to bloat and ruin his chances to gain the title that he so desperately needed. He didn't eat another thing, nor did he sleep until after his eating binge. When I first saw him on Thursday, he was running on pure adrenaline. In retrospect, the depression is easily explained by looking at the accumulated stresses that he had been subjected to. He said that he was still feeling bloated, so to be sure he was as lean as possible, he put on a sweatsuit and jogged around in the 90-degree heat of Singapore until he was satisfied that the bloat was gone. By the evening weigh-ins, he made the 80-kilogram weight limit by weighing exactly that. That's called perfect timing, plus a chunk of good luck. By the next day, he was probably weighing a very full cut, 180 pounds, and in the best shape of his life. Still, almost without sleep, he looked very confident and in command of himself. It was a good thing that he was in his best shape, because Erwin Note of Belgium was the best that I've ever seen him. He gave Charles a real run for the money, as can be seen by the closeness of the score and the fact that they actually tied in the pose-down round. Erwin keeps getting better, and this time he surprised a lot of people with his outstanding overall condition. I think it was Charles' larger upper body that tipped the scale in his favor. Wow, what a crazy story. So in the scores, Charles got 9 in round 1. Erwin Note got 10. In the second round, Charles got 7. Erwin got 11. And in the third round, Charles got 8, and Erwin got 9. So it was very close. Oh, I see the pose down's down here. Okay, I didn't see that. So in the pose down, Charles' total score of 24 added, and then you add 8. So he got 8 in the pose down. And Erwin Note also got 8 in the pose down. So they tied in the pose down. But Charles had 24 points from the 3 rounds of prejudging, so he ended up with 32. Erwin Note had 30 points, so his 8 points added up to 38. So he was definitely in second. And then Erwin Noller from Germany was in third place. Wow. See, I never heard that story before. This is the stuff you get from reading John Bailick's Bodybuilding News. All right, light heavyweights. Chuck Williams just hasn't happened on the national and now world scenes. He planned it that way. In 1982, he placed second in the MPC National Championships. And based on that very auspicious showing, he dedicated all his energies to becoming the world champion that he now is. Chuck felt that the pressure and responsibility of his data processing job were too much for him to invest the kind of energy that he felt was necessary to realize his dream. He turned his dream into reality by listening, not to the naysayers, but to his own inner voice, and took a leave of absence from his job. Some might say that the investment of 1 year of your life is too high a price to pay, but you won't hear that from Chuck. As he said backstage after winning, it was a feeling like no other. His plans call for a successful professional career, and based on his ability to make his dreams a reality, he will fulfill his plan. While Chuck was the most decisive winner, Kijo Ryman didn't come unprepared. Kijo was very lean, actually in harder condition than Chuck, but was structurally less proportional. Kijo, with his very dark tan and blonde hair, has a very commanding stage presence. The stage persona could be further enhanced by posing that was more smoothly executed. He has been second before, and he has come back improved. If he can fine-tune that posing and continue his overall rate of improvement, he will be difficult to beat in 1984. The 1984 Mr. Universe will be held at Caesar's Palace in Las Vegas, so the rest of the world will have to adjust to intercontinental travel. Andy Olsen, representing Caesar's Palace, was on hand to give the IFBB delegates a short video of the kinds of sporting events usually held at their very opulent hotel. The facilities, of course, are second to none, and my experience with that hotel, and Andy in particular, has been that of dealing with professionals. I really look forward to the event. It'll probably be at least 5 more years before the U.S. gets the bid to sponsor the greatest event in amateur bodybuilding, so don't miss it. Okay, the score sheets for the light heavyweight class. Yeah, Chuck, again, a perfect winner, 5-5-5 all 3 rounds for a perfect score of 15, and then he got a 5 in the pose down. So he got 20 points total. Kijo Ryman from Finland was a 10, 10, and a 10. So he was straight seconds. He got 30 points. And then in the pose down, he also got a 10 straight seconds in the pose down. So he ended up with 40 points total. And then Ian Dow from England got a 25 in the first round. Ulf Larsson from Sweden tied with Ian in the first round with 25. And then in the second round, Ian got a 20 and Ulf got a 23. And then the third round, the posing, Ian got 20 and Ulf got 25. And then in the Pose down, Ian got 19, and the pose down, Ulf got 22. So Ian Dow was in third. All right, let's read about the heavyweight class. Bob Parris and Barry DeMay. Bob Parris continued on his road to the Mr. Olympia. He plans on 1984, but only time will tell. He surely has the potential to achieve that pinnacle. His problems in Singapore were twofold. Barry DeMay, the 21-year-old champion from Holland, and an almost late arrival at the prejudging. Bob couldn't do anything about the terrific condition Barry was in, but he could have been in harder, leaner condition himself. Almost being late was not really his fault. The heavyweight class was scheduled to begin at 5 p.m., but because the light heavyweight class finished at 4:20, the decision was made to go right into the heavyweights. I'm not sure who made that decision, but it caused a lot of anxiety for both Christian Janich and Bob. Neither was even in the theater when the warm-up announcement was made. They both literally ran the almost half mile to the auditorium. Janich did not even have a chance to oil up before going on stage. Bob had time to get oiled, but he was in a very agitated state. Bob is usually very cool and methodical, but this totally unexpected change of schedule really weighed heavily on him, and it showed on his face. He knew that Barry was in really top shape and was a very formidable competitor. So Bob arrived on stage without his usual composure. The effort to get to the theater and the extreme anxiety showed not only on his face, but also by a profusely sweating body. The anxiety had triggered an adrenaline reaction, but it had no way to be used as he stood there through the prejudging round that narrowed the field from 18 to 10. And with the first round being the compulsories, he was forced to perform in his overheated state. Barry beat him in this round by 1 point, but Bob regained the lost point and one more, and by the end of the prejudging, he was ahead by 2. I felt that he never regained complete control. Yes, the overall shapes were exceptional, but the sheen of excess sweat was there as a veil covering his usual muscularity. Barry posed very well, but in a different style from Bob. Bob emphasizes his proportions, and Barry concentrated on hard muscle shots that focused on his high level, especially for a heavyweight, muscularity. I would have placed the two even, or possibly 1 point ahead for Barry after the prejudging. Memory kept calling back my image of Bob in harder condition when he won the Nationals. None of the international judges had seen him before. I had. Was I judging him against the present reality or against my memory of him? The difference between Bob on Friday and at the finals on Saturday was marked. As can be seen by Saturday's pose-down scores, Bob's 2-point lead turned into a 7-point decision. Barry was philosophical about his second-place finish and was, in fact, the first person to congratulate Bob. Barry, at 21, has a long career ahead of him, and he said, wait till next year. Ralph Mueller of West Germany has to be stood next to be appreciated. I am 5'7", and he towers over me by more than a foot. Add to that a reasonably lean body weight of 270, and you have a heavyweight surpassed in size only by Lou Ferrigno. I have seen Ralph on only one other occasion, the 82 universe, and he seems to have grown and still held on to his muscularity. He will have to weigh 300 pounds to be as big relative to his height as are Barry and Bob at 225 to 230. And then in the score sheets, as John said, Bob got 8 in round 1, Barry got 7, Ralph Mueller got 15. And then in the second round, the compulsory posings, Bob scored 7 and Barry got 9 and Ralph got 14. And then the third round, the free posing, Bob got 7, Barry got 8. So it was very close. And then Ralph was 15 again. So after prejudging, Bob scored 22 points, Barry was 24. So Bob was ahead by 2 points. Then in the pose down, looks like Bob got almost a perfect score. So he scored a total score of 28, and Barry got 11 points in the pose down. So a lot more judges were putting him in second. So he ended up with 35 total points. Ralph Mueller, of course, was third. Christian Janich, who John mentioned from Austria, who was at the time Rachel McLish's boyfriend, he was in fourth. All right. Great stuff from John Bailey. So maybe I'll read some more of these bodybuilding news issues that I have. I wish John would have continued with that, but probably wasn't financially feasible to continue doing it. And I really love the fact that he got it out so quickly, which was really unusual back then for the bodybuilding magazine, because like I said, you usually had to wait 3 months to get the results, and John would have his within a month, I think. All right. All right, let's talk about the IFBB pro world championships from 1983 that Muhammad Mukawi won. The first article I want to read comes from Muscle Mag International, and this was from the August 1983 issue. And it says, Mukawi swoops, twists, and flexes his way to victory again, and all with a smile. The IFBB Pro World Championships, written by Bob Kennedy, photos by Chris Lund. Atlantic City is a dump. However great its past, I don't know. But today, it is a rundown, crime-ridden relic whose once famous boardwalk is now no more than a series of stores, either selling out or boarding up. Few indeed are flourishing. The only saving grace is the big establishments primarily designed to service the gambling fraternity of the free world. Caesars, Golden Nugget, Resorts, Tropicana, and Playboy. Their spanking new shapes tower up from the rubble and turn the city into a poor man's Las Vegas. You can rumble your way from one establishment to another in one of the town's rent-a-wreck style cabs, which is certainly safer than chancing being accosted on the streets. Or you can roam the casinos and throw yourself to the mercy of the world's most skilled pickpockets. But we are here not for the gambling nor the Playboy bunnies, although their presence did add to the scenery, but for bodybuilding. It is the IFBB World Professional Championships which drew us to this out-of-the-way derelict metropolis. Playboy hosted the show and ABC televised it. And what a magnificent job. Charles Blake and Wayne D'Amelio bring everything together and the event shines. The atmosphere is friendly. Stars chat with the spectators who are really part of the event. It is as though we are all on television. And we are indeed. Arnold Schwarzenegger chats with Super Swim Diana Nyad while she was perched on the shoulders of two of the show's big men, Scott Wilson and Lee Haney. What are you doing up there? He shouts. And he lifts her down and discusses the event for the TV cameras. When the contestants come on stage, we are surprised. 90% plus were in shape. What a treat. This was the second Olympia. Some said it was better. First off, we see Muhammad Mukawi, his tan darker than ever. He's big and looks like a winner. After sweeping the last two Grand Prix in Europe, he's no longer an underdog. He's the man to beat. What's this? I can't believe it. Rocky DeFerro looks great. He's absolutely ripped. The serratus stand out from his torso even when he's relaxed. And his back. It has the density and the best cuts in the show. Wow, Robbie's back again. He looks the same. Maybe a shade off ripped, but the super taper is still there. The back and the arms. Oh, those arms are superb. Nice to see Lee Haney in the pro ranks. Looking at him here, he seems to justify the title already afforded him, a second Sergio. Another formidable sight, and more improved than ever, Scott Wilson from California. He, too, is big. And look, there's Bob Birdsong. He's cut. Tony Pearson, always in shape. How does he do it? Johnny Fuller, looking heavier than ever, carrying on in his ebony skin, enough Johnsons to sink an oil tanker. Ali Mala has gained size, as has the elusive Dave Johns. Kazuo Sudo from Japan looks out of place. He has abdominals, but little else. Even his once outstanding legs have deserted him. The Phantoms here, Mr. America Steve Mihalik, looking good. And there's Don Mazaluski, Ken the Demon Passarellio, and another newcomer to the pro ranks, Gary Leonard. He's a former Mr. America too. This is going to be a great event. On this morning of the show, Muhammad Mukawi awoke, aroused from slumber by the noise of his grumbling tummy. Like all the other contestants, he was hungry, perhaps more than the others, for he hadn't had a square meal in weeks. At 8 a.m., he phoned the Berkeley Motel to his friends Ken Wheeler and Vince Gironda, both of whom had had a hand in his contest preparation. "Get over here, guys. I want to eat bacon and eggs and drink cup after cup of coffee." Gironda was horrified. "He'll wreck his chances." Wheeler grabbed for his pants, shirt, and jacket and reached out for Muhammad's breakfast tucked away in his suitcase, a package of sun-made, sun-dried, seedless 100% raisins and a small bottle of unsweetened apple juice. 10 minutes later, Muhammad was enjoying the feast and his yearning for bacon and eggs was diminishing, if ever so slightly. I picked up Gironda, who claimed he had been pacing the room since 4 a.m. "Get me out of here, Bob. What's for breakfast?" Both Gironda and myself, later joined by Ken Wheeler, had a standard American breakfast. Scrambled eggs, 3. I was fully expecting the Iron Guru to order at least 3 dozen. When the waiter asked him if everything was satisfactory, Gironda glared at him. holding up a soggy hash brown potato square. I don't remember ordering this. As the competitors were being introduced all together on stage, Schwarzenegger was quizzing all the pretty girls in the audience for the TV cameras. Do you like bodybuilding? What about these big muscles? Do you like them? Who do you hope will win? The prejudging round one, the relaxed round, was concluded with Bacaway and Haney tying at 17 points each for the first place. The lower the score, the better, because the new IFBB system is not to allocate points, but placing position. At the end of round two, the compulsory poses, Haney had moved ahead of Bacaway, and likable Rocky DeFerro had moved in front of both. He was leading the pack. No mean feat in this very professional lineup. Rocky had a dark tan, which has previously eluded him, but more importantly, he was carrying a very low body fat percentage. He may be a trifle wide in the hips when compared to the likes of Robinson and Pearson, and could stand a little more V-shape. But boy, what arms, shoulders, traps, and his back was the outstanding feature of the entire show. My only criticism is that Greg should watch the faces he makes when he poses. He could learn a lesson from Bacaway, who, even during this most gruesome and demanding pose down ever held on a bodybuilding stage, maintained a smile throughout. More than that, Bacaway outclassed the other competitors during this pose down, many of whom just gave up and left the stage. At one point, the muscle flexing almost turned into blows when Robbie tried to squeeze in between Bacaway and Fuller. Shades of the Olympia, where Fox and Fuller almost had a stand-up battle of fisticuffs. Robbie gave up trying to squeeze in and remained in the background. Not being seen could have cost him. Yes, it was a great pose down, the best I've seen, full of excitement and teeth-wrenching, blood and guts posing. Who says bodybuilding competition is not a physically demanding sport? Gary Leonard, a formidable Mr. America, wanted to wow the judges and finally did with his abdominal isolation display. Leonard has good overall shape, but appeared a little heavy and certainly under tan when compared to Mihalik and Johns in round one. He looked very long in the body, and possibly higher cut trunks will correct this visual imbalance. Leonard has good proportion, and he's the kind of person who, now that he's gotten his feet wet on the professional scene, will make great strides in future contests. Huge applause was given to another relative newcomer to the pro ranks, Scott Wilson. Now, this man is monumental. He has long triceps, full biceps, and a rarity, a complete compartment of cells in the forearms and calves. The British judge, Ron Davies, favored Scott as the overall winner in rounds two and three. Look for a training feature on Muscle Mag International on Scott soon. Like Tony Pearson, Johnny Fuller seldom seems to change. I've never seen him out of shape, which is amazing because he enters all the pro shows. At this event, he was saturated with oil, but he did not really stand out as the overall winner. After the prejudging compulsory poses, Johnny started a free pose, which is an IFBB no-no. The situation was worsened by the fact that Oscar State did not attempt to stop him, yet had previously rebuked several contestants for lesser violations. Oscar State's record has always shown that he is totally impartial, so his inaction of Fuller was not because of any favoritism, but probably because Johnny's posing outburst took him completely by surprise. His placing was about right, but Johnny was slightly disgruntled at only getting $1,000 in a dismal sixth spot. After the prejudging, Vince Gironda stopped Fuller on his way out of the auditorium. "You and Bacaway are the only guys in this damn contest with personality," said the Iron Guru. Good-natured Johnny just smiled, thanked the North Hollywood gym owner, and moved on. Attending the prejudging but falling out of the finals was New Yorker Don Mazaluski. He just was not adequately prepared to do battle in this pro league. Don appeared outclassed, far too heavy, and to top it all off, he had a torn left biceps. Realizing he shouldn't have entered, he left early. Thanks, Don. Kazuo Sudo from Japan, a past NABBA entrant, had perfect abs, but his body weight was way down. He is one contestant who chooses to compete without the aid of steroids. He looked a little lost on stage, and he was not really up to the high standard of the show. Dr. Clifford Amadori, a bodybuilding nutritionist who had done his military service in Japan, approached Kazuo, thinking he couldn't speak English, attempted to communicate in Japanese. "It's nice to see you in this country. You are looking very good physically," he mumbled in broken Japanese. At this, Kazuo smiled and, looking at Amadori, said in perfect English, "Thank you very much. I appreciate your kind words." According to the audience, Robbie Robinson was the most loved man on stage. Let's face it, the man has incredible shape. Was there ever such an upper body? And the biceps, they tower upwards like huge mountains of rock-hard muscle. Two judges gave Robbie first place in round two. He seems to hover between being cut and ripped. And assuredly, if he leaned out fractionally more, he would have been in the running for the whole show. After his excellent free posing display, one of the Playboy bunnies ran out and gave on stage and gave Robbie a kiss. In the audience, we spied Mike Katz looking bigger than ever. There, too, was Dan Lurie, taking pictures. For who? Rachel McLish was then introduced on stage wearing a sexy one-piece red jumpsuit. The spectators gave her a great welcome. And then it happened. D'Amelia introduced the Austrian Oak. The man looked handsome, healthy, fit, outfitted in the now well-known ABC Sports World yellow jacket. For once in my life, said Arnold over the mic, I am speechless. Backstage, I had my face this close to Rachel McLish's arse. Like a bolt of fiery red lightning, Rachel rushed from on stage from behind the drapes. I beg your pardon, Arnold? Would you mind repeating that, Arnold? Arnold refused. She pressed the point with a hint of annoyance, but still smiling. Would you repeat that, please? The Austrian evaded this question, but followed up with, Rachel, I like the way your fingers hold the microphone. At this, Rachel retaliated, Arnold, I do a lot of interviews, and I'll have a few things to say about you, too. But predictably, Schwarzenegger took the insult one step further. I understand you're up for the part of Deep Throat Part 3. Rachel tossed her head back in frustration, holding on to her composure, but most definitely unamused behind the million-dollar smile. She decided to hold back the ultimate remark that she and Arnold made up with a kiss, which concluded their dialogue of insults, leaving the audience wondering whether the whole thing was planned or ad-libbed. Salvador Ruiz from Spain had great abs, but his thighs were too small for the size of his huge calves. His rib box is really high, and perhaps through a mineral deficiency, he was shaking so much during the third round posing that he had to leave the stage. Ken Passarello should not have placed last, but he did. He had rusty trunks, rust skin color, and rusty posing. He just doesn't look into good poses, which is a shame because his physique is very fine and proportionate. He is a photographer's nightmare. When you get him in focus, he moves to another position. Last year at this show, Ken was the most interesting competitor. Today, posing to the music of Memory from the new musical Cats, he failed to impress. Not that he wasn't in shape, he was, but it was the super standard of most other competitors which pushed him into the background. Tony Pearson has really piled on the muscle since his Mr. America win. Now he can stand next to Robbie Robinson. In fact, on this occasion, he looked wider than the ever-great Robbie. Even the Pearson arms are right up there. His guns do not have an outstanding hang, but when he bunches up, they are monumental. Tony added interest to his shaft routine by making his stage entrance in slow motion, a nice innovative touch which went over well with the audience. Ali Mala had squeezed himself into the most obnoxious purple trunks, and even so, he impressed. Perhaps a little on the heavy side, he appeared more blocky than usual. This man has added more muscle to his frame of late than any other pro. Perhaps he's too big. A little more refinement would negate that bunched up look and bring him in line with the elusive prize money. He will be up there soon. On the Friday before the show, Bob Birdsong had filled in for Arnold on a TV commercial. Now making a second comeback, Birdsong was welcomed warmly by the crowd. Most of his body appeared totally ripped. His posing needs work to really impress the judges, and to be fair, he did attract a large amount of applause after his free posing. One judge placed Bob first in round one. Rocky DeFerro has brought up his calves. The way he was training them, something had to happen. A more intense way of training cannot exist. Before the show, I met Rocky's wife up at the Playboy gym. During our conversation, she mentioned nothing about his super condition. All the more reason for my astonishment when Rocky first appeared on stage. I have a feeling that he may have lost out slightly in symmetry because he's a little large in the hips. But Rocky was king on this day when it came to comparisons. His sharpness, the best by far, was indisputable. And when he flexed those arms, the audience groaned in disbelief. What a man. Dave Johns has everything yet nothing. What can one say about this really big man who is invariably a shade off maxing out on definition? Always has 20-inch plus arms, yet produces little more than lukewarm applause when he poses. Dave has taken the Mr. America title and he's done well with the NAVA organization, but as an IFBB professional, he will not take home the bacon until he remodels his posing routine. He needs, in a word, flamboyance. Another competitor to choose the Cat's memory music, one of the most beautiful tunes around, was Steve Mihalik. Yes, the music is beautiful, asked photographer Bob Gruskin, who couldn't stop humming through Mihalik's routine. But it doesn't do much for a display of muscle and sinew. Steve, who's known to be a real animal when it comes to training, has very wide shoulders and unusually slender hips, a bodybuilder's dream. But even though he's posing as enthusiastic, he seems to come up against it in pro contests because of his height. One suspects that in order to get cut, Steve reduces his weight drastically, a little too much to be in the running. Lee Haney got some first places in every round. He has height, size, proportion, and cuts, so his overall third place is easy to accept. His posing was still from the amateur ranks, and if he snazzes it up, he will immediately take his place at the top of the class. Especially noteworthy is the awesome Haney most muscular pose. His weakest point is his arms, which no doubt will improve in time. It was clear from the beginning that Egypt's Mohamed Mekawe was confident. He has prepared himself magnificently, even down to his dazzling smile, which seldom left his face. In the early rounds, he was covered with vitamin E cream, which the skin appeared to absorb to his detriment. Several men looked sharper than Mohamed. A quick change before the pre-posing saw Mohamed with a light covering of Johnson's baby oil. His perfection was reborn. As Vince Gironda watched his protege go through his free posing, tears welled up in his eyes. He rose to his feet and he matched the Egyptian pose for pose. And then, realizing he could be of more help if he applauded and shouted his approval, he did just that. Ultimately, as his pupil concluded his utterly phenomenal posing routine, the Iron Guru's tears broke loose and flowed freely until Mohamed left the stage to rapturous applause, shouts, and whistling. Mohamed Mekawe is unquestionably the greatest poser on the pro circuit today. His Chariots of Fire display scoops him handfuls of points, and on this occasion merited him 5 first-place votes from the judges. After the show, both Mohamed and Gironda were surrounded by enthusiastic fans. Everyone wanted their picture taken with the winners. One enthusiast made the faux pas of innocently asking the Iron Guru his age. "None of your goddamn business," replied Vince. "What do you think that Mohamed, now that he's won 3 pro shows in a row?" retaliated the Inquisitor without a trace of embarrassment. Gironda took a long, hard look. "The kid is going to be great when he learns the pose." And of course, they got some great pictures in here taken by Chris Lund. Great report by Bob Kennedy. All right, let's move on to Flex Magazine, August 83. And this has their report of the pro world. It says the 1983 Professional World Bodybuilding Championship, the first battle of the season, proves that this year could be the hottest in recent bodybuilding history, by Bill Dobbins, editor-in-chief. The 1983 IFBB Professional World Championships were held February 26, 1983, at the Playboy Hotel and Casino in Atlantic City. Promoted by Wayne D'Amelia, the show was covered by ABC Television, with Diana Nyad and Arnold Schwarzenegger commentating. Mohamed Mekawe, fresh from victories at the British and Belgian Grand Prix, was the winner, making this his third pro title in a row. Of course, following his 2 impressive Grand Prix wins, it was to be expected that Mekawe would be the easy favorite in a lineup that did not include top Mr. Olympia contenders, such as Dickerson, Zane, Viator, Benoit, Beckles, or Platts. But as the pro world began, it became clear that Mekawe would have his work cut out. He was not in the perfect condition that had allowed him to mow down the opposition in Europe. Looking at the list of competitors, it was hard to decide who the man to beat might be. Would it be Haney in his first pro show? Robbie Robinson, Tony Pearson, Gary Leonard, Bob Birdsong, or Steve Mihalik, all looking better than they had before? Scott Wilson, Dave Johns, or Greg DeFerro, big as battleships? Ali Mala in his usual top shape? A lot was at stake. Money, for sure, and a chance to qualify for the Mr. Olympia. Many of these men were, in sense, the second team, not necessarily inferior to the top Mr. Olympia contenders, but hungry for a chance to prove that their name should be included this year in the illustrious pantheon. With a lineup like this, it was possible that any one of the 6 or 7 men, assuming top shape, would stand a very good chance of winning. So we all looked very hard at strengths and weaknesses when the competitors came on stage for round one. Makawe, who had drawn number one, was just as he had been at the Mr. Olympia at the far end of the lineup. But with his successes fresh in everyone's mind, the judges were not likely to overlook him. Next to him stood Johnny Fuller, bigger and more muscular than ever, but he would suffer in round one from having too much oil on his upper body. Number three was Lee Haney, also not quite carrying the shape that gave him victories last year at the American and World Championships. He was a trifle smooth, and his thighs were not quite up to the massive development of his upper body. But he wasn't so far out that he couldn't be easily counted out in the competition. Fourth in line was Tony Pearson. Tony's upper body has continued to improve year after year, although this tends to draw even more attention to his lower body weaknesses. But his condition and definition were superb, which definitely made him a threat. Ali Mala was in excellent shape. His symmetry was not his strongest point, so he would have a hard time in round one, and he would have to rely on his posing later. He just had to hold his own for the time being. Bob Birdsong has one of the most aesthetic and balanced physiques in bodybuilding. Standing next to Ali, he looked in good shape, although he didn't stand out. It was predictable that the judges would tend to compare him less often than one might think he deserved. Number seven was Greg DeFerro in the best shape of his life. DeFerro has been criticized for lack of symmetry and aesthetics, but he was so huge and ripped while merely standing, it seemed unlikely that any of the judges would place him very low. Ken Passarello did not bring the demon with him to Atlantic City, so the audience would not be treated to his creative approach to round three. In this round, it was apparent that Passarello had gained considerable size since his lightweight world championship victory, although he seemed to have sacrificed some cuts and definition in the process. Salvador Ruiz of Spain looked in good shape and made a respectable impression. He was not, however, entirely competitive in this company. Don Modzelewski seemed unprepared for the contest of this caliber and withdrew later. When it comes to pure muscle mass, it's pretty hard to do better than Dave Johns, who wearing number 12 looked immense. But he was not really ripped and expressed the opinion that it is virtually impossible and ought to not be required for a really big man to get super cut. Steve Mihalik had performed in exhibitions at the American Championships and the Miss Olympia. On stage in Atlantic City, he showed good symmetry and proportion, appeared in excellent shape, and lacked only a certain mass and density, the kind of look that results from dieting just a little too hard for a show. Scott Wilson, number 14, has some of the most impressive delts in bodybuilding. His shoulders look so wide, you would bet he had to turn sideways to walk through a door. Most of the rest of his physique was equally impressive. Unfortunately, the longer you looked at him, the clearer it became that he was not as cut as when he won the Mr. International title. Still, he was a definite contender. Kazuo Sudo of Japan was next to last in line, and like Ruiz, he made a respectable showing, although he was clearly not going to be competitive in a lineup of this quality. And then last but not least was Robbie Robinson. Prior to the competition, consensus had it that Robbie was in the best Mr. Olympia shape, and he would simply walk away with a contest like this one. And certainly, he still had that great symmetry, the enormous beauty of proportion. It's just that he didn't have much of it. He looked like a junior version of the Robbie who had snapped at Frank Zane's heels at the 1977 Mr. Olympia. But even as a lesser Robbie, would still be a force to be reckoned with here in Atlantic City. Round two sorted things out a little bit more clearly. Makawe was more impressive when he posed. DeFerro, flexing next to Haney, looked even more muscular by comparison. When Fuller, who was in the past rarely looked much more muscular posing than when he stood relaxed, hit shots, his muscularity nearly exploded. Wilson was truly massive, but perhaps not cut enough to capitalize on his impressive size. Of course, what we're all seeing on stage and what was taking place in the official scoring was not exactly the same. Looking at the score sheets, you would have sworn the judges had been viewing a different contest. Makawe, for example, received three first place votes in round one, as well as a sixth and an eighth. DeFerro got two first place votes, plus a seventh and a ninth. You can attribute this wide division of opinion to subjectivity, or is it possible that some of the judges were simply confused about what it is they were looking at? One plausible answer is that some of the judges might have been overly impressed with McAway's Grand Prix win and thus scored him too high in round one. In round two, his scores were much more consistent. 3-5-6-6-2-2-2. No first. Although DeFerro still had problems with one judge. 111484. As round three got underway, Makawe proved his mastery of the free posing routine. His graceful and aesthetic posing garnered 5 first-place votes and nothing lower than 2nd. While a competent poser, Johnny Fuller, on the other hand, filled his routine with slow, deliberate muscle shots, primarily showing the judges what they'd seen in round two. A few of the pros posed really well, but several were quite obviously out of shape, which cut down the effectiveness of their routines. When in his best shape, Robbie Robinson can drive an audience crazy, but he suffers a handicap when he's not at his physical best. Round three, after all, is a presentation of physique round and not purely a posing contest. There were, however, many good moments as round three continued. Lee Haney exciting the crowd with his huge upper body and warm smile. Tony Pearson hitting a stomach vacuum with an ab shot that brought out magnificent cross striations in his thighs. Scott Wilson ending his routine with a series of most muscular shots that brought the crowd to its feet. One thing was clear in round three. You could see why most of these bodybuilders were pros. In the first two rounds, they'd been under the control of the judges. They'd posed for comparisons as officials looked for weaknesses. In round three, they were the ones who established control. Virtually each man looked better in round three than in prejudging. And even those who had fallen out of contention were able to make the magic happen. Ali Mala with his miniature Arnold poses, flashing beautiful biceps peak to his twisting back shot. Bob Birdsong, a big grin on his face, showing the kind of posing precision that won his class at the Mr. Universe. Ken Passarello moving with near ballet-like elegance, attacking the bigger competitors with grace and beauty. Gary Leonard hitting a vacuum and then rippling his ab muscles back and forth like an adept yoga. Steve Mihalik manipulating the audience with a routine that was both fierce and intense. If he wants to be an effective force against the top Mr. Olympia competitors, DeFerro should probably develop a new approach to third round posing, using fewer pure muscle shots. Yet he was very effective in Atlantic City, and it was his great shape that made so much happen when he hit a shot. Posing to a track from the Eye of the Tiger album, he showed tremendous quadriceps, delts, and arms and lats that stuck out a mile. Moreover, his routine displayed many changes in pace and dynamics, but at the bottom line, it was still a muscle routine and did not seem like it would win him the round. However, except for another 8 from that same judge who scored him that way earlier, his scores were quite respectable in round three. Good enough, it turns out, to bring him into the pose down tied for 2nd place with Lee Haney. There was nothing perfunctory about the pose down. DeFerro, a full 11 points behind leader Makawe, came on so strong, he actually won the pose down 10-14. An impressive feat, although not strong enough to win the title. Haney came in 3rd, but his performance and physique left little doubt among many of the spectators that it would be a matter of time before his huge size, tremendous shape and proportions, and easygoing stage manner would bring him many titles. When the winner was announced, and it was Makawe and DeFerro standing on stage awaiting the announcement, you could see that Greg didn't believe it, and many agreed. Many who felt that Makawe's victory was a result of the 3-round system. Many who felt that if the judges were obligated to give 1 overall score at the end of the show, DeFerro would have been the easy winner. But you can't fault the Egyptian. Makawe has an outstanding physique, tremendous proportion and symmetry, and nobody poses better than he does. If he'd been in his best shape, the voting no doubt would have been unanimous. So then they had the Pro World Championship judges' accuracy marks. John Colacioni from the USA had an 86.7%. Roger Schwab from the USA was 75.4%. Ron Davies from England was only 69.8%. Jacques Bloemhart from Belgium, the guy who's been around a long time, only had 67.9%. Jim Mannion from the USA only had 62.2%. Winston Roberts from Canada had 60.3%. And Dominic Sertl from the USA was down to 58.4%. This was a difficult contest for the judges because the caliber of the top 6 competitors was very even. This is evident when one considers that 4 of the finalists were placed first. Here's how each judge placed his top 3. Dominic Sertl had Makawe in 1st, Robinson in 2nd, Scott Wilson 3rd. Roger Schwab had Makawe 1st, Robinson 2nd, and Wilson and DeFerro tied for 3rd. Mannion had DeFerro 1st, Haney 2nd, Fuller 3rd. Wow, I didn't even have McAwe in the top 3. Roberts had DeFerro 1st, Fuller 2nd, Haney 3rd. also didn't have McAway in top three. Colazione had Haney first, McAway second, DeFerro third. Blumhardt had Haney first, DeFerro second, Wilson third. And Davies had Wilson first, McAway second, Robinson third. At the end of round two, the top four scores were DeFerro 33, Haney 34, McAway 35, Robinson 37. McAway obviously won the contest with his free posing score in round three. Wow, that's really interesting how the scores were back then when they really emphasized the posing. You could actually win a contest even if you were losing the first two rounds just based on your posing. And they did three different rounds of judging instead of one score like they did in the MPC. And they only do one score now, of course. There's another article here. It says, muscles versus cuts. The question continue. On the basis of pure mass, Muhammad McAway will never beat the other big pros. He is proportioned like a big man, but he's not a big man. When he stands next to a competitor, outweighs him by 70 or 80 pounds. This becomes very apparent. But McAway does win. He beat some good bodybuilders in Sweden and Belgium, and he did it by being in such outstanding shape, so cut and defined that no one could make him look small. In Atlantic City, Muhammad was not in that Grand Prix shape, and this is no surprise. It's extremely difficult to go all out in November and then turn around and attempt the same thing in February. Second place in Atlantic City went to Greg DeFerro. Greg was in his best shape. Not only was he massive, but also ripped, defined, and vascular. Greg doesn't have the shape and proportions of the Egyptian, nor does he pose as well, but he's a very good bodybuilder. So the question remains, is McAway so much better than DeFerro that he can compete in less than perfect shape when DeFerro is in perfect shape and come out the winner? Is it that the gap between them is so vast, or is it achieving top conditions so unimportant currently? The judges in Atlantic City seem to be saying yes to both queries, yet it seems unlikely that they have provided the final answers. All right, guys, I got one more account of the IFBB Pro World Championships. It's interesting reading these three different versions of it. This one's written by Bill Reynolds, and it was written for Muscle and Fitness in the August 1983 edition. It says, Muhammad McAway comes of age with his third consecutive win over a lineup of IFBB superstars, rookie and veteran, in another premier IFBB competition. The Playboy Hotel and Casino in Atlantic City has held several high-level IFBB competitions in recent history, but none of these could rival the majestic appearance of 15 of the best IFBB professionals who strode on stage to do battle in the Professional World Championship held on February 26th. And after the smoke of battle had cleared, Muhammad McAway, with his burnished bronze muscles reminiscent of an ancient warrior's armor, stood on top of the pyramid of bodybuilding talent. The Professional World Championship was filmed by ABC Television, and many muscle and fitness readers have no doubt already viewed the Wide World of Sports broadcast, which was hosted by Arnold Schwarzenegger and marathon swimmer Diana Nyad. An excellent broadcast, it further increased the prestige of the IFBB and bodybuilding, but as good as it was, the program couldn't convey the excitement of being present at the contest, soaking in the applause of a super enthusiastic audience. As with the majority of professional competitions these days, to say nothing of the successful amateur American championships held last fall, the Professional World Championship was organized and promoted by the physique production team of Wayne D'Amelia, Charles Blake, and Karen Clark. Wayne, Charlie, and Karen also hosted their annual Night of the Champions event in May in New York City. I can't say enough good things about physique productions. The organization has been at the spear point of IFBB pro bodybuilding for the last 5 years, and each of its shows has surpassed the previous one. Thanks should also be given to the Playboy organization, which provided an excellent contest venue and superb hospitality to all the competitors, officials, and members of the press. The Playboy Hotel and Casino has thrown open its doors several times in the past for competitions such as the Professional World Championship, and it should be applauded for its efforts in helping the IFBB to continue promoting the sport of bodybuilding. Initially, 16 contestants lined up to undergo the scrutiny of the judges Roger Schwab, John Colacioni, Jacques Blumhardt, Jim Mannion, Dom Serto, Ron Davies, and Oscar State. Competitor Don Mazaluski, however, had second thoughts following his afternoon prejudging of round ones and two, and he failed to return for the evening public judging of round three. That left 15 superb champions to be placed, a difficult task at best, but one that the judges handled with admirable aplomb. To get an idea of the superb quality of the lineup, consider that it boosted competitors from 8 American and 2 Mr. International championships, plus 9 Mr. Universe title holders. There were 5 former World Amateur Bodybuilding Association WABA stalwarts of present, including newcomers Kazuo Sudo from Japan and Salvador Ruiz from Spain. Sudo's entry follows that of Shigeru Shigeta in the 1981 Mr. International competition. So it's obvious that Japan, once a National Amateur Bodybuilding Association, or NABA, and WABA stronghold, has now shifted allegiance to the IFBB, a credit to the organizational efforts of Mrs. Raiku Matayama, Japan's IFBB leader. After round one, Makawe and Lee Haney, who made his pro debut after a sensational amateur campaign in 1982, were tied for first place with 17 points. Remember, with the judging sub-revisions made at last year's IFBB Congress, the low score now wins. Robbie Robinson trailed with a 19, followed by Greg DeFerro with 21, Scott Wilson with 24, Johnny Fuller with 25, Tony Pearson 29, and Bob Birdsong with 30. At this point, the rest of the pack was at least 18 points behind Birdsong. The round two compulsory poses began to separate things a bit, with DeFerro scoring a 12, so now he had 33 points, to jump into the lead. Haney managed a score of 17, so he had 34 total points to settle into second, 1 point ahead of McAway, who scored 18 points in round two and 35 points total. The rest of the top six were Robbie Robinson with 37 total points, Scott Wilson with 47, and Johnny Fuller with 52. By the evening competition, McAway was the first to pose. His routine was the same routine that he performed at the Mr. Olympia and the two Grand Prix shows held in Stockholm and Antwerp, respectively, last fall. However, he was a little off the sparkling condition he displayed late last year. But even though Muhammad was a bit smooth by comparison, he still had the crowd on its feet as he glided powerfully from pose to pose. Again, I was impressed on how his balletic routine brought to mind the image of a muscled-up Mikhail Brizhnikov dancing Swan Lake. Johnny Fuller, massive and muscular, was the second competitor to pose. Fuller has a few structural weaknesses, notably high lats, but he has done wonders with his physique. I first saw him at the 1978 Amateur World Championships in Acapulco, and that Johnny Fuller bears no resemblance to the one that currently mauls an audience with one shocking pose after another. It'll be interesting to see how much more improvement Fuller makes in the next few years. Already he's a superstar. Can he go even higher? Lee Haney posed next, and he's looked great, albeit perhaps a gnat's eyelash less muscular than last year. Later, Lee told me that he felt he had held a little water, particularly just below the skin over his thighs. Still, Haney was awesome. Massive beyond belief, well-proportioned, and showing deep gullies between the bold peaks of muscle mass. Perhaps his posing leaves a little to be desired, but Lee has recently relocated to Southern California, and with the Master Blasters posing tuition, he'll soon be posing better than ever. Lee is available for posing exhibitions and seminars and can be contacted care of Muscle and Fitness magazine. Tony Pearson was next to pose. He displayed a totally unbelievable taper to his physique, with wide shoulders, incredibly wide lats, and a very small waist and hips. It's been said that Tony appears to weigh much more than he actually does, and it's no doubt true because of his incredible ability to spread his lats. Pearson is still quite young. He won his Mr. America title in 1978, and he has plenty of time to reach his goal of being one of the greatest bodybuilders in history. Ali Mala posed after Pearson, and his physique was both massive and densely muscular. Ali posed effectively, and I think that only a marginal lack of calf mass holds him back. Certainly, no one trains with quite the kamikaze intensity of Mala, who took to wearing a samurai headband during the last few weeks of training at Gold's Gym prior to the Professional World Championships. Bob Birdsong, who issues the use of drugs in his bodybuilding philosophy, posed in the sixth position. Bob had won the Mr. America and Pro Mr. Universe titles in the mid-1970s, and then he dropped out of competition to follow a religious calling. Despite avoiding steroids, Bob is back to the physical level he enjoyed in 1975 and 76, and he's poised to push his physique towards the stratosphere. He posed much more effectively than in the past, so it's only a matter of time before Birdsong assumes his position as one of the truly great pros. One of his strengths, besides his faith, is his family. a charming wife and a precocious young daughter who accompanied Bob to Atlantic City. A brand new Greg DeFerro returned to his South Jersey homeland to shock the bodybuilding world. I've attended virtually every one of Greg's competitions since he burst on the national and international scene at George Snyder's Best in the World Championships in the summer of 79. He looked great that year and in 1980, and then he slipped somewhat in his condition the next 2 years. Now he's more muscular than I've ever seen him, and still carrying his great mass and startling proportions. It was obvious as Greg posed that he would be a solid contender, and indeed he led the pack after two rounds of judging. Ken Passarello sans Chris makeup followed DeFerro. Unfortunately, Kenny was a bit off his Mr. Universe form, although he still posed like a champion. There's little doubt he'll return later this year in even better form than in the past. Interestingly, Passarello is one of the sports renaissance men, a successful teacher and realtor, a world champion bodybuilder, and a connoisseur of fine cigars. Gary Leonard, making his first competition appearance since the 1980 Mr. Universe show in Manila, followed Passarello on stage. Gary wasn't quite at the level he reached when he won the Mr. America competition in 1980, but he's obviously recovered from the severe shoulder injury he suffered skiing early in 1981. Clearly, he will be a force in future IFBB professional competitions. He has a very aesthetic development, which he displays with supreme confidence when posing. Salvador Ruiz, now the IFBB vice president for Spain, posed in 10th position. Salvador speaks very little English, which no doubt accounted for some of the problems on stage during the first two rounds of judging. He has an excellent and aesthetic physique, however, and with a little more attention to diet, I'm sure he'll move up the ladder to future IFBB pro competitions. Dave Johns, the 1977 Mr. America winner, followed Ruiz. Dave was very massive and had superb proportional balance, but his muscularity left something to be desired. A probation officer in Los Angeles, Johns will undoubtedly improve both his condition and placing in pro shows later this year. Interested competition promoters can contact Dave Johns for posing exhibitions and seminars in care of this magazine. The Phantom, Steve Mihalik, posed next, making this his first IFBB appearance in more than 2 years. The outstanding guest poser at last year's American Championship, Steve had won the Mr. America title in 72. Between 1972 and the present, he had spent nearly 2 years paralyzed from the waist down following an auto accident. So it's a miracle each time he steps on stage to compete. As usual, Steve was very muscular, but he lacked a bit of the muscle mass that he displayed in the past. Still, he thrilled his audience with his raw courage and muscularity. Veteran Scott Wilson posed next. Although his name may be new to some people, Scott has been competing at a high level for more than 10 years. He was the 1973 Mr. California winner, as well as the Pro Mr. America winner in 1977. I was also quite impressed with Wilson, who packs an aesthetic 210 pounds of super dense muscle on his 5'8" physique. Without a doubt, Scott would have placed higher, and he will do so in the future. Kazuo Sudo followed Scott Wilson and posed with grace and power. Although a bit off past form, Sudo did show amazing abdominal and tricep development. Like Ruiz, Kazuo spoke very little English, so I was unable to learn very much about him or his training. The final competitor was legendary Robbie Robinson, who appeared extremely muscular but lacked some of the huge muscle mass that has characterized his physique in the past. The Black Prince is in the midst of a big comeback following his 2-year retirement, so we can expect a lot from him in the future. You can read about his back training elsewhere in this issue. In future issues of Muscle and Fitness, we'll carry articles on all his body parts. Makawe led the pack in round three with an optimal score of 6 points, giving him a 3-round total of 41. Haney received 18 points ahead and DeFerro 19 to tie for second with 52 each. Robbie Robinson scored 20 points for 57 total and was in fourth. Scott Wilson scored also 20 points with 67 total, so he was in fifth, and Johnny Fuller scored 25 points with 77 total in sixth after three rounds. In 7th through 15th were Bob Birdsong with 100 total points, Tony Pearson with 101, Ali Mala with 134, Dave Johns with 153, Steve Mihalik with 165, Gary Leonard with 175, Kazuo Sudo with 193, Salvador Ruiz with 209, and Ken Passarello with 223. The top six competitors after three rounds went into the pose down round. Greg DeFerro received 3 first place votes, 1 second, 2 thirds, and a sixth to win the pose down, vaulting him into second place overall. Mohamed Makawe's two firsts, 2 seconds, 1 fourth, and 2 fifths gave him first place, while Lee Haney's 1 first, 2 seconds, 1 third, 1 fourth, and 2 fifths left him in third place. Robbie Robinson took fourth with 1 second, 2 thirds, 2 fourths, a fifth, and a sixth. Scott Wilson ended up in fifth with 1 first, 2 thirds, 2 fourths, and 3 sixths. And Johnny Fuller rounded out the top six with 1 second, 1 third, 1 fourth, 2 fifths, and 2 sixth place votes. Surrounded by Playboy bunnies, Joe Weider gave the $10,000 check to winner Mohamed Makawe, bringing up to a close the Professional World Championships. A super successful competition, the Professional World Championships marks Makawe's third consecutive IFBB professional win. A great competition and a great champion. What more could one ask for? Wow, so that's really crazy that Makawe was in third place and then won the contest after winning the posing round. So round one, which was standing relaxed, it looks like, well, actually, he tied for first. He tied for first. So I take that back. He tied for first with Lee Haney in round one. They each got 17. And DeFerro only had 21. So looking at the judges' scores, Muhammad did get 3 firsts. Haney got 1 first. And DeFerro, 2 firsts. But just some of these other scores were so crazy. Like DeFerro got a 9th and a 6th. Makawe got an 8th and a 7th. How could he go from 1st to 8th? And then Lee Haney's scores were a little bit more consistent, but he did get a 6th and a 5th. Round 2 was the compulsory posing. So this is where DeFerro's size and muscularity probably stood out better. So DeFerro scored 12. So he won that round by a great margin. He got 1, 2, 3 first place votes and a 2nd, 2 fourths, and that one judge number 6, Ron Davies, did not like Greg DeFerro. He gave him an 8th again. Haney got 2nd in this round, but only 1 first. The rest of his scores were 2nd, 3rd, 4th, 5th. But he got 17. DeFerro got 12, and then Muhammad was 1 point behind him and 18 points. No first place votes there in the muscularity round. So Muhammad tied for first with Lee Haney in round one, and then he was in third place in round two. And then going into round three, that's where he cleaned up with 5 first place votes from the posing and 2 second place votes. So he got 6. And DeFerro got 19. He didn't get any first place votes there. And Lee Haney got 18. And he got 1 first place vote. So interesting. I wonder if the judges were confused about what they were looking at. That's why they had the different, you know, the widely varying scores. But they were definitely looking at the posing as posing when they got to the posing round. Not quite so much just the body, but more for really how you could display the posing. So very interesting. So DeFerro did win the pose down. So that's interesting, isn't it? So when they showed him just posing down against each other, DeFerro won the pose down with 3 first place votes. Muhammad was in 2nd with 2 first place votes. And then Lee Haney got the other first place vote. And Scott Wilson also got a first place vote. So the final scores in the pose down was DeFerro only got a 10. So he won pretty easily. And McAway was 2nd with 14, and Lee Haney was 3rd with 16. So then the final points, Muhammad got 55, DeFerro got 62, and Lee Haney got 68. So pretty wild. Yeah, it's very, very interesting looking back at these old contests and how they judged them. And it was also interesting to hear that this was the first year they did the placement system instead of the point system. So they decided that at the IFBB Congress in 1982, they were going to get away from that. And then they went back to just the placement system, which made it easier for the judges. But they still definitely had those 3 rounds of judging. All right. So that's it, guys. I was going to read the Night of the Champions articles, but that would take us probably another hour. So I'll leave that for another time. Again, if you guys have any thoughts or ideas on what you want to hear, please let me know. Just send me an email at naturalolympia@gmail.com. We were supposed to do an interview this week with Rick Poston, who was a top 1980s competitor. He was in the 83 Mr. America that we talked about a couple of weeks ago. And Rick used to own a gym out here in Tampa, but Rick is not computer literate, so he was not able to do the interview over the computer. He wants me to do it in person. So if I can get the equipment or find somebody to get the equipment to do that, we might be able to do that in the near future. But Rick was not able to use the computer to do the interview, even though it's pretty easy to do the Zoom calls. So hopefully we'll get Rick to do an interview. He sounds like he's got some great stories in the near future. All right, guys, that's it for the show this week. We will be back next week with another podcast. Again, thanks to our Patreon sponsors for all your support and making this podcast happen. If you guys are interested in becoming a Patreon sponsor, check out the link below or go to our website, bodybuildinglegendshow.com, and you'll see the link in the upper right-hand corner. Until then, guys, train hard, stay safe, and we'll see you next week. Take care.